got a sprain or an itch, pain, rash, swelling, or twitch, call up and ask me, Dr. Lasky. Dr. Lasky.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining.
How many have heard the term CRISPR? Raise your hands. Higher. One, two, three. Wow, quite a few. But I still see that most of you are a little bit hesitant about raising your hands. Maybe it's because you think you heard the term, but don't quite know what it is. Well, don't worry. We're not going to quiz you on it. But Carmen and I are going to tell you about it. It may just be the discovery of the century. In fact, it just might be akin to the top 10 scientific discoveries of all time, such as the discovery that the sun was in the center of our solar system by the Polish astronomer Nicholas Copernicus, the gravity published by Sir Isaac Newton, or maybe it's up there with electricity, evolution, bacteria, relativity, the Big Bang Theory. No, not the TV show, but the real Big Bang. Penicillin, DNA, and the periodic table of the elements.
There's antimony, arsenic, aluminum, selenium, and hydrogen, and oxygen, and nitrogen, and rhenium, and nickel, neodymium, neptunium, germanium, and iron, americium, ruthenium, uranium.
Now, Carmen and I thought that maybe we would take a stab at it.
There's antimony, arsenic, aluminum, selenium, and hydrogen, and oxygen, and nitrogen, and rhenium.
And nickel, neodymium, neptunium, germanium.
And iron, americium, ruthenium, uranium.
Europium, plutonium, lithium, vanadium.
And lanthanum, and osmium, and acetine, and radium.
And gold, protactinium, and indium, and gallium.
And iodine, and thorium, and thulium, and thallium. There's yttrium, ytterbium, actinium, rubidium.
And boron, gadolinium, niobium, iridium.
And strontium, and silicon, and silver, and samarium.
And bismuth, bromine, lithium, beryllium, and barium.
There's holmium, and helium, and hafnium, and erbium. And phosphorus, and francium, and fluorine, and terbium.
And manganese, and mercury. Molybdenum, magnesium,
dysprosium, and scandium, and cerium, and cesium,
and lead, praseodymium, and platinum, plutonium,
palladium, promethium, potassium, polonium,
and tantalum, technetium, titanium, tellurium,
and cadmium, and calcium, and chromium, and curium.
There's sulfur, californium, and fermium, berkelium,
and also mendelevium, einsteinium, and nobelium,
and argon, krypton, neon, radon, xenon, zinc, and rhodium,
and chlorine, carbon, cobalt, copper, tungsten, tin, and sodium.
Well, after that interlude, let's get back to CRISPR. Because I think CRISPR is right up there with all of those other discoveries that we mentioned. So I'm going to ask Carl to start this show by telling you just what CRISPR is.
Like so many words used in science, CRISPR is an acronym that stands for Clustered Regularly Interspaced Short Palindromic Repeat. And if you are not familiar with that term, a palindrome is simply a word, sentence, or number that reads the same backwards and forward.
Think of the two words, wow and mom, or the number 1881, for example. How about a man, a planet, canal, Panama? Is that entire phrase a palindrome? Well, yes, it is.
And CRISPR is made up of repeated palindromes. It is a family of DNA sequences found in the genomes of organisms such as bacteria.
These sequences are derived from DNA fragments of bacteriophages that had previously infected bacteria. Now, boy, we're throwing out these terms like water at you. A bacteriophage is simply a virus that infects and replicates within bacteria.
So, here we have a bacteria that was attacked at some point in the past by a virus. Then the bacteria's defense for the future was to take a piece of virus and incorporate it into its own gene so that whenever that particular virus attacked again, then it would recognize it and destroy it before it destroyed the bacteria.
Pretty much what vaccines do for us. Now, these viruses, again called bacteriophages, are composed of proteins that surround a DNA or RNA genome. It's a structure which may be quite simple
or actually may be quite complex. So these sequences play a key role in the antiviral defense system of the bacteria and provide a form of acquired immunity. Again, just like vaccines do.
So these CRISPR sequences are found in approximately 50% of sequenced bacteria genomes.
In order for us humans to use this information to help us in the future, an enzyme called CAS9, which stands for CRISPR-associated protein 9, uses the CRISPR sequences as a guide to recognize and cleave specific strands of DNA that are complementary to the CRISPR sequence.
This is extremely important, as the Cas9 enzymes, along with CRISPR sequences, form the basis of a technology known as CRISPR-Cas9.
It's this technology that can be used to edit genes within organisms. Now, you may still be asking yourself, so what? How does this help us? Well, one of the problems that we have had, even with our knowledge of genes and chromosomes, has been our inability to take out or cleave the bad sequences that in many cases are the reason for many genetic medical problems, like sickle cell anemia.
In this particular disease, a single protein error in one gene on one particular chromosome is at fault. And until now, we never had the ability to remove this faulty component and replace it with the correct one.
We never had this capability until now with CRISPR. The editing process has a wide variety of applications, including basic biological research development of biotechnical products and treatment of diseases. The development of the CRISPR-Cas9 genome editing technique was recognized by the Nobel Prize in Chemistry in 2020, just last year, and was awarded to Emmanuel Charpentier and Jennifer Doudna. CRISPR strategy may actually be used in the future to take on threats like diseases.
CRISPR can turn genes on or off, or make them work in different ways, hopefully to protect our health and protect your health.
We've already talked about the case of someone born with a gene mistake such as sickle cell anemia. But what about a gene change that happens later in life and puts you at risk for cancer? Scientists want to be able to load these flaws into CRISPR, cut out the DNA flaw, and fix it. So as of right now, you may be asking yourself, how do they intend on doing this?
The basic idea would be to take some cells from a patient, edit them using CRISPR and grow more of them, and then inject them back into the patient. It sounds like a simple idea, but doing it on a large scale is hard.
We know that there are a large number of different types of cancers affecting almost all organs in our bodies. The reality is that they are all linked to problems in gene. So CRISPR does hold promise, though there are no treatments or cures yet. Right now, a lot of the research focuses on immunotherapy, which taps your body's immune system to fight cancer. But there are other ways to use it.
They can also be used to attack the cancer itself.
Some scientists have used CRISPR to supercharge the immune system's T cells.
And in lab tests, CRISPR researchers actually edited T cells so they would recognize cancer. These edited T cells then kill cancer cells.
They may be used to turn off cancer's defenses. Remember that T cells aren't supposed to attack normal cells. Healthy cells use certain proteins, including one called PD-1, as a sign for T cells to avoid. It's like saying, everything's okay here, no T cells needed.
But some cancer cells have PD-1, even when they are not healthy, thus tricking our defenses and allowing cancer cells to take over.
In an experiment, scientists used CRISPR to turn off the gene that makes PD-1. And just like that, T cells attack the cancer cells. If we can't kill them, then maybe we can slow them down.
Some researchers use CRISPR to change genes in cancer cells and thus slow down how fast the cancer could spread.
We can all get enthused, but remember that it may take years before it's widely available. There are currently 4 trials underway in the United States which are targeting cancer, lymphoma, and inherited blindness. There are many other studies, and researchers are hopeful that the CRISPR technology will help us control things such as high cholesterol and rid us of HIV and Huntington's disease. And researchers have already used CRISPR to cure, you heard me right, cure muscular dystrophy in mice.
Remember that we said that sickle cell disease is due to a flaw in a single gene. So it may be the first to be used successfully in humans.
Unfortunately, there are not many diseases that involve just one gene. So let's go to the CRISPR's risks. What are the risks? Well, remember that we're talking about changing DNA, and this involves the genetic coding that affects everything from your eye color to the odds of your having a heart attack. So ethics comes into play here.
We could be editing DNA in sperm or eggs, and this change would get passed on to the next generation.
There would obviously be far-reaching effects. So that kind of research is banned in more than 40 countries, including the United States.
What if CRISPR accidentally edited very similar DNA that's not its target?
And since the most minimal changes in DNA can have huge impacts, researchers need to use a lot of caution. But let's look at the bright side of CRISPR. CRISPR again works by injecting a DNA construct, that's what it's called, into a living organism that is composed of the CAS9 enzyme that cuts or deletes a segment of DNA.
A sequence of RNA then guides the Cas9 to the correct location to cut, and a new DNA template then repairs the cut and alters the gene.
So let's quickly end this topic by talking about 8 ways that CRISPR will likely impact the world. CRISPR can be used to remove malaria from mosquitoes. Scientists have created mosquitoes that are resistant to malaria by deleting a segment of the mosquito DNA. Now, the altered mosquitoes pass on the resistant genes to 99% of their offspring, even when they mated with normal mosquitoes. Pretty good, huh?
We could be treating Alzheimer's disease. Since CRISPR-based platforms have already been developed to identify the genes controlling the cellular processes that lead to neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, hopefully this will lead to new treatments.
We already mentioned HIV. The HIV virus inserts DNA into the cells of the human host, and CRISPR has been successful in removing the virus's DNA from the patient's genome. Maybe we could use it against herpes, hepatitis, and other dangerous viruses.
CRISPR may be used to develop new drugs to treat heart disease, blood disorders, and blindness.
Well, how about livestock? CRISPR can be used, and has actually already been utilized in China, to delete genes in livestock that inhibit muscle and hair growth to grow larger stock for the country's commercial meat and the wool industries. It can also be used in agriculture. Researchers are using CRISPR to discover new ways to improve crop disease resistance and environmental stress tolerance in plants. And maybe, again, just maybe, it could help reduce our need for plastic. You heard me right. CRISPR can be used to manipulate a type of yeast that transforms sugars into hydrocarbons, which can be used to make plastic, which would, in the end, greatly reduce the need to rely on petroleum-based resources for plastics. And this could ease the stress on the environment.
CRISPR does have the ability to alter the course of human evolution. It can possibly improve society for the greater good.
However, in the wrong hands, it could pose significant problems for mankind.
This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center.
Hello, I'm Dr. Harold Lasky. I have been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 34 years. We are located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just two blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Tulsa Welding School and the old Pottsburg Post Office. We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains. We are proud to welcome to Southside Medical Center Dr. Susan Pollan, MD, a board-certified pain management specialist. Our medical practice emphasizes pain management as well as family medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care. Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show.
There are many diseases and maladies that have been noted in early writings, way back thousands of years in some cases. One of these is the migraine headache. Migraine headaches were first recorded 5,000 years ago. Now, there were some famous sufferers, and these included Thomas Jefferson, Julius Caesar, Cervantes, Sigmund Freud, Ulysses S. Grant, Lewis Carroll, and Vincent van Gogh.
For a long time, they could only be treated with trial and error approaches based upon the prevailing medical knowledge of the time, or with primitive methods based upon superstition.
For example, some early physicians suggested drilling a hole in the skull to free the evil spirits, while others recommended either purges or bloodletting, applying a hot iron to the site of the pain, or even inserting a clove of garlic through an incision into the temple. But medical science replaced superstition at some point in time, and researchers began to look into the physiology of migraines.
Researchers have long believed that migraines involve some type of interaction between cranial blood vessels and the brain.
One theory suggested that migraines involve an initial momentary stage of blood vessel constriction, followed by a more prolonged period of vessel dilation, thus causing the characteristic throbbing pain. But in newer theories, this suggests that the initial stimulus for migraines occur within the brain itself, causing major cranial vasodilatation, which in turn caused the release of serotonin.
Now, serotonin has a broad spectrum of effects in the cardiovascular, respiratory, gastrointestinal, and central nervous systems.
It influences the tissues in which it's stored by stimulating and interacting with various types of receptors on the individual tissues. The body's reaction to serotonin directly is related to the nature of the specific type of serotonin receptor activated. For example, serotonin can cause nausea and pain in the head. So drugs that are non-selective can affect all 5-HT receptors, and for instance, cause the side effects of nausea while reducing the migraine pain.
In time, research has led to the development of medications that are way more selective and made to activate or block serotonin's effect on a particular serotonin receptor.
Most researchers feel that 5-HT1 is the specific receptor involved in migraine headache patients. It's found mainly in the cranial blood vessels and the nerves. So what happens during a migraine attack? Here, the serotonin levels decrease. This allows the blood vessels to dilate.
This then causes the surrounding tissue to swell, including the nerve endings, which transmit impulses to the brain, resulting in throbbing pain or migraine.
Over the past 50 years or so, there have been significant breakthroughs in the treatment. There have also been several medications that have helped control the migraine headaches. But like most medications, they often had significant side effects, as well as contraindications in certain patients.
For example, Because some treatments have vessel-constricting properties, they are not recommended for use by patients with cardiovascular and heart conditions.
Not only that, some medications can also cause drug rebound headaches. In this case, the medication itself actually causes or prolongs the duration of the headache. We could probably say that the first breakthrough came with the discovery of ergotamine tartrate as a treatment for migraine headaches in the 1940s.
It acts by constricting blood vessels, so it works on the serotonin system. It is not selective in the receptors targeted, and as a result can cause nausea and vomiting.
We're not going to get into the specifics here, but it can cause other symptoms as well as dependence. But it was a first step in the treatment of migraines. Then came dihydroergotamine mesylate, or DHE, in the 1950s, just 10 years afterwards. It is similar to ergotamine, but it did not have the dependence problem. That was a good thing.
Unfortunately, it was also non-selective and often caused diarrhea. As a matter of fact, this occurred in half the patients who took it.
Well, 40 years went by when Imitrex, the brand name for sumatriptan succinate, became available. Now we finally had a selective drug that specifically targeted the 5-HT1 receptor. It acted by mimicking the action of serotonin at that 5-HT1 receptor site, and it thus constricted the dilated blood vessels, decreasing not only the pain, but many of the associated symptoms. It's still being used for the acute treatment of migraine headaches. However, it should only be used when there's a clear diagnosis of migraine that has been established.
Migraine headaches are not the same for everyone. In many people, they happen in stages, which include a prodrome where hours or even days before a headache. About 60% of people who have migraines notice symptoms, including light, sound, or smell sensitivity. They may also suffer from fatigue, food cravings, or lack of appetite, mood changes, severe thirst, bloating, constipation or diarrhea, as well as an odor.
Now there are new medications on the market which may be most beneficial for those especially who have not had success with those medications that have been on the market for such a long time. One of these is Reyvow, brand name for lasmiditan.
We just talked about selective 5-HT1 receptor drugs, and Reyvow is a new one. It is indicated for the acute migraine headache and not as a preventive for migraines. That is important to know. It comes in two strains, 50 and 100 milligrams.
The company states that in clinical studies of people who were treated for a moderate to severe migraine headache with Reyvow, about 30% of the people were pain-free within 2 hours after just one dose. And some people were free of pain in as little as 1 hour.
Just ask anyone with migraine headaches who are usually satisfied with just decreased pain.
If you're not a migrainer, that may seem like a long time. But for migraine headache patients, 1 hour and 2 hours can be a miracle for them. Now, there are other new ones, and we'll try to talk about those on our next show. And maybe a bit more on migraine headaches. So if you're interested in our continuing on migraine headaches for the next show, please, please drop us a message at livelonger@gmail.com. Again, that's livelonger@gmail.com. We will truly appreciate it.
I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana. We've come to the end of another Hey Doc show.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.